VOA.
It's important that we work together between our two countries to address these important human rights issues.
Human rights issues surface again in China. It's Thursday, June 29th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online right now at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, competing South China Sea claims. A member of Congress speaks out on North Korea. Solar mass transit. New cancer-fighting devices. And 3D printing ancient architecture. It all starts now on today's VOA Asia. China's rights record has come under attack this week. The case of ailing dissident Liu Xiaobo continues to resonate. A day after it was revealed the Nobel Peace Laureate was granted a medical parole after being diagnosed with liver cancer, new U.S. Ambassador Terry Branstad said the 61-year-old Liu should be allowed to seek treatment outside of China if it would be of help.
And we're interested in doing what can be done to see if it's possible. We Americans would like to see him have the opportunity for treatment elsewhere if that could be of help. But it's important that we work together between our two countries to address these important human rights issues. And because of the relationship I have with both President Xi and President Trump, I hope I can be a go-between that can help address some of these challenging issues in the future.
The United States said Liu should be allowed freedom of movement and access to the medical care of his choice, but the state-run Global Times editorialized on Wednesday that Liu Xiaobo is not free and is subject to prison supervision, including any approval to invite outside experts to participate in his treatment. It said if he is allowed to leave, he could motivate more public opinion attacks against China. On Tuesday, the United States released its annual report on the global problem of human trafficking and forced labor and downgraded China from Tier 2 to Tier 3, joining 22 other countries. China denounced the designation as irresponsible. Human Rights Watch Asia Director Brad Adams tells VOA's Victor Beatty external factors such as U.S. displeasure over China on trade and North Korea may have had some impact, but China's rights record remains the main reason.
Well, we don't really know. In fact, we don't know a lot about what decisions, about why the decisions were made by the State Department this year. There are some predictable decisions and some unpredictable ones. There's a lot of speculation about the China decision. Some of it has to do with the Trump administration's unhappiness with China generally over things like trade and North Korea. There's been a lot of commentary recently about President Trump being unhappy with China on North Korea. So it may be that things outside of the four corners of the TIP process were involved. You know, there have been longstanding concerns with trafficking in and out of China, the role of the Chinese authorities, their lack of action to try to limit the amount of trafficking in persons. And there is also just a trajectory that often leads countries into Tier 3 when they've run out of waivers. And that's, you know, one element here is that you can only be on Tier 2 watch list for so long before you are downgraded without a waiver. And clearly the State Department decided not to provide a waiver in the case of China.
Well, Brad, the report said China convicted fewer sex and labor traffickers in the 12 months ending March 31 than in the previous year, forcibly repatriated, as you indicated, North Koreans without screening them for indicators of trafficking, handled most forced labor cases as administrative issues, not criminal prosecutions.
Yeah, which, all of which is true, but there's an element of judgment that comes into play with the TIP report every year. You could read that paragraph you just read for many countries that are not in Tier 3. And so we're not unhappy that China is in Tier 3, but you asked if I could answer why they're in Tier 3, and it's not entirely clear to us at this point.
What impact might it have on U.S.-China relations that seem to be improving?
I'm not sure the U.S.-China relations are improving. I think they're very complicated. They zig and zag and have ups and downs. So I don't assume that the relationship is improving. And in fact, with the volatility of the Trump administration, it's very hard to say that the relationship is on a clear path in any particular direction. I think this could have a minor impact on the relationship. This will be an irritant to China. China does not want to be judged by any country. Of course, most countries don't. But China feels that it's a global superpower and therefore is beyond reproach. And you can see this in its behavior at the United Nations Human Rights Council, and its reaction to reports by groups like Human Rights Watch and others. You know, they will simply say that they have everything under control. And if they don't, well, they're a developing country and they're doing their best, which of course is nonsense. They have a terrible, dismal human rights record. So, you know, they will just see this as another attack. There are, of course, people inside China working diligently on problems of trafficking in persons, mostly in civil society, but there are people in government of good faith. And so, you know, one would hope that this would energize them and make them feel like they have support for the arguments they're making internally.
Brad Adams denounced as unforgivable China's denial of access for Liu Xiaobo to world-class medical care that's available to the Chinese elite. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Myanmar journalists charged over visit with ethnic rebels. China frees three activists who probed Ivanka Trump supplier. Global cyber attack hits Indian port. Former United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to speak in Boston. Analysts say Thailand is taking a bet on legalizing casinos. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's more, on Facebook at VOA Asia. And don't forget to visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. China and Vietnam face a stiff new test in avoiding a showdown over undersea oil drilling after Beijing cut short a high-level meeting last week. But experts say the two sides will eventually patch things over. The state-run Xinhua news agency in Beijing reported Fang Changlong, vice chairman of China's Central Military Commission, left early from a defense border meeting in Vietnam due to, quote, working arrangements. Neither side is saying officially whether something else led to the cancellation. Analysts who track Vietnam, like Murray Hebert, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies think tank in Washington, believe it comes down to a disputed South China Sea oil exploration tract in Vietnam's hands, as well as Hanoi's recent contact with Chinese rivals Japan and the United States.
Most analysts believe China was either sending Vietnam a signal about its deepening ties with the U.S. and Japan, or pressing it to stop exploring for oil near China's nine-dash line, or maybe both. Unless Hanoi reads the signal correctly and makes the changes China demands, we can expect Beijing to send more warning shots across Vietnam's bow in the months to come.
Beijing claims the 3.5 million square kilometer sea, which overlaps Vietnam's exclusive economic zone. Li Hong-hip, a research fellow with ISEAS, Yusuf Ishak Institute in Singapore, says China likely pulled its general out of the talks to warn Vietnam's oil exploration near the so-called nine-dash line that China uses to mark its vast maritime claims.
From the Vietnamese perspective, it's on the continental shelf of Vietnam, and Vietnam has sovereign rights over that area. And furthermore, after the ruling last year by the arbitral tribunal, China does not have any legitimate claim over that area, but China insists that it's still a disputed area, and they believe that Vietnam is violating a common understanding between the leaderships of two countries. In the background, there are some resentments against Vietnam's recent rapprochement with the U.S. and Japan as well. So I think there are a few things at work here.
Disputes over maritime sovereignty led to deadly clashes between Vietnam and China in 1974 and 1988. Experts like Carl Thayer, Southeast Asia Specialized Emeritus Professor of Politics at the University of New South Wales in Australia, says Vietnam will probably try to put aside the Chinese general's sudden departure to get along with China.
Vietnam cannot afford to have permanent antagonistic relations with China, or to go out of their way to antagonize China, because they have to sleep with their eyes open every night. One, it's a positive step, but two, it also serves propaganda functions for both sides to beam back into their country, to their netizens who hate each other, that the cooperation of a positive nature.
Vietnam and China stepped up dialogue after the World Arbitration ruling, and border defense talks have been in place since 2013. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei. Happening now in Asia, a global cyber attack disrupted operations at India's largest container port, adding to the headaches of governments and businesses affected by so-called ransomware code that takes a user's data hostage until the victim agrees to pay for its release. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad that you're listening with us today on VOA Asia. North Korea's ambition to hit U.S. targets with nuclear-tipped missiles is being taken seriously by many members of Congress, especially those who represent areas geographically closest to North Korea. Democrat Colleen Hanabusa is from Hawaii, and she sits on the House Armed Services Committee. Representative Hanabusa recently sat down with VOA Mandarin reporter Peggy Chong to discuss measures to address Pyongyang's growing threat.
The most important part that we have to recognize is that no one quite understands what the purpose of what Kim Jong-un is doing. And as a result of it, that it's the unknown and it's the unpredictability factor that causes the most angst for everyone. Having said that, everyone is under the impression that Hawaii is the closest, basically part of the United States, not the territories, but the United States itself, one of the 50th states, that's the closest to North Korea. In actuality, we are not. Alaska's closer, and in some projections, Seattle, Washington, for example, is 500 miles closer to North Korea than we are. So the best strategy that the Defense Department has probably come up with is that the first thing we need to do for the security of Hawaii, and then it takes care of because we're the first, we believe we're the first line of defense, mm-hmm. is a radar system. So that is what is first on our agenda. And we also want to see that the missile defense is really boosted in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Because believe it or not, Alaska actually gives Hawaii the best coverage, as well as our allies along the Pacific Rim.
You sit on the Sea Power and Projection Forces Subcommittee.
That's right.
Many members are very concerned about China's activities in the South China Sea in mm-hmm. recent years. What is your view on China's island-building activities, and do you think that the United States should take more action to counter this behavior?
Well, as you know, there is some people call it the cow's tongue, and some people call it the nine dotted lines, which is the expansion area as far as China is concerned in the South China Sea. I remember hearing once the president of Vietnam speak, who said, "The first thing you Americans can do is stop calling it the South China Sea. You can call it the East Vietnam Sea or the West or the West Vietnam Sea, or you can call it the West Philippine Sea, but you shouldn't call it the South China Sea because it's like a concession to China as to the name." Having said that, however, the United States is committed to the protection of the area, and it's important to note that the policy of the United States, as far as the naval forces is concerned, is that we are building, and that's what you see in the upcoming National Defense Authorization Act and the appropriations measures, so that there is supposed to be, and there will be shortly, a shift of about 60% of our sea forces into the Pacific area. Asia Pacific, people may not remember this, but what President Obama said in 2011 is, you know, the 21st century will be defined by Asia Pacific, whether we live in conflict or we live in cooperation. And of course, for us, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said, and let's not forget, the gateway to Asia Pacific for the United States is Hawaii. So Hawaii plays a critical role. And as you know, we are the home base for what we call the Pacific Command,
yes.
PACOM.
Yes.
And PACOM, for the United States Defense Department, is 55% of the Earth's surface.
Mm.
And as I like to tell people, it also includes the three greatest economies of the world, and the fourth rising being India, But, you know, when you really think about the focus, that's why the United States is not going to simply sit back. And we are going to put the investment, especially in the sea forces. Mm-hmm. So we will the United States will never give up its posture in the Asia-Pacific region.
Colleen Hanabusa, a Democrat from Hawaii, speaking with VOA Mandarin reporter Peggy Chang. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Chinese authorities have released on bail three activists who had been detained after investigating labor conditions at a factory that produced shoes for Ivanka Trump and other brands. The activists were working with New York-based China Labor Watch to look at the Huajian Group factories in southern China. Check out all the news every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, India is the world's third largest carbon polluter, and there's a push to install solar panels on homes and buildings in the Indian capital. A solar bus has been touring the New Delhi area, encouraging residents to opt for solar energy. We hop on for a ride with Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi.
A quick lesson aboard the Solar Comet teaches residents in the Indian capital how rooftop solar panels can power their entire home at affordable costs, just as they do on this bus. Pujarini Sen of Greenpeace India, which is funding the initiative to help support a government policy encouraging rooftop solar, explains how the plunging cost of solar panels and government subsidies have made rooftop solar plants viable.
So I don't think people recognize this as the wonderful investment option that it has become.
Through such engagements with residents, the Solar Comet aims to give a big thrust to installation of rooftop solar panels in crowded, sprawling cities like Delhi. Harnessing the sun in millions of homes is a key component of India's race to cut down carbon emissions, but urban areas have been slow to go green. A half hour in the Solar Comet removes common misconceptions that solar panels require large rooftop space and heavy maintenance, and the prospect of saving on electricity bills is motivating resident Praveen Kumar to go solar.
Now we have come to realize that it is a good time to install this solar power at our rooftop. That space is unutilized. That can pay back even financially in 4 to 5 year time.
As a city that chokes on the world's dirtiest air begins to understand that the benefits are not just financial, several commercial establishments and educational institutions have already installed rooftop solar panels. Principal Inderjeet Singh Bakshi of Dayal Singh College counts the gains made since their solar plant was installed a year ago.
We have avoided adding more than 84 tons of carbon dioxide to the environment. So in one sense of the word, by having these panels, we have planted thousands of trees, so to say.
New technology that allows unused power from rooftop plants to go back to the grid means people can even help light up other homes, points out resident Siddharth Pandey.
Long term, I just feel good that I'm producing power. I'm not adding to the burden on the planet.
As initiatives like the Solar Comet encourage homes to go green, optimism is growing that India will generate 40% of its electricity from non-fossil fuels by 2022, exceeding pledges made in the Paris Climate Accord. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Developing at this hour in Asia, China launched its newest warship, a large guided missile destroyer touted as the latest in naval technology and seen as a challenge to naval rivals in Asia. The 10,000-ton destroyer has been developed entirely in China. The armaments are also new for the Chinese Navy. Sail your browser or mobile phone to VOA Asia Facebook for news and features. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia in the never-ending battle against cancer, scientists are incessantly refining their tools and developing new methods. some of the most important advances have been made in treating breast cancer. VOA's George Pudich tells us the advances now have the 5-year survivability rate at 90%.
Doctors say there are two main factors crucial for saving the life of a breast cancer patient: early discovery and precise targeting. Currently, surgeons are relying on tactile and visual examination followed by a biopsy to confirm the cancer's presence. But new tools may now be able to discover tumors when they are microscopic in size, eliminating the need for repeated surgeries. Researchers at the University of Western Australia are developing a handheld imaging probe that can clearly distinguish bits of tumor in a lab specimen.
This is a device that can look for microscopic amounts of cancer. We've never been able to do that in real time before, so it's a really exciting advance.
The device is still in its prototype phase, but the researchers say clinical trials may start in about 2 years. Once the breast tumor is discovered, in many cases it is treated with radiotherapy. The downside of this method is that radiation may also damage surrounding healthy tissue, including the heart, when treating the tumor in the left breast. A new radiotherapy device called Align RT ensures pinpoint accuracy of the radiation beam, even if the patient shifts position.
With Align RT, we're able to track the patient in real time in all 6 degrees of freedom and make sure that that breath hold is reproducible and steady throughout treatment. And that way, we're able to completely avoid the heart.
An overhead projector covers the patient's body with a random pattern, while cameras mounted on the ceiling draw a three-dimensional image of the body and adjust the radiation beam as the patient is breathing and moving. Helped with a visual display, the patient can control her breathing so that the movement of her chest stays within the safe zone.
You are able to make the bar sit in the right place, and that's done by having exactly the right amount of air in your lungs. And you just feel reassured that you're doing something that's going to help your treatment in all of that.
Align RT is already in use in more than 800 hospitals worldwide, and it has been nominated for a prestigious Royal Academy of Engineering's MacRobert Award. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
If not in person, you've likely seen pictures of the soaring cathedrals of Europe that seem to defy gravity. VOA's Kevin Enix reports a new generation of 3D architects are taking a page from the ancient masters to form their new creations.
The soaring ceilings of Westminster Cathedral in London have withstood centuries of wear and tear, all without the reinforced concrete and steel that are the bones of today's skyscrapers. Now, engineers in Switzerland are using the same techniques that the ancient masters used to create sturdy structures that are almost works of art.
How to actually find a good form that you can use humble or weak materials to be stable through geometry rather than through stresses, that we have entirely forgotten. And the master builders knew how to do that. They had to do this because otherwise they could not have kept their Gothic cathedrals stable for the last 500 years, right? And so that's exciting to us.
These 3D printed floor pieces look as delicate as a spider web, but its creator says it's as safe as anything you'll see in big city buildings.
To me, it's actually really a no-brainer because by going back to these lost techniques and demonstrating them through rigorous research, that you can actually provide a safe structure that is at least 70% lighter. So that is why I think there is so much interest, because why would you build 70% too heavy?
Block says that part of what makes this work so unusual is rediscovering a lost art form.
We are not surprised that Gothic cathedrals are standing, but nowadays we're unable as engineers to actually demonstrate why they're standing, how long are they safe, and we are bringing all this knowledge back. The research that we are doing here at ETH is basically to demonstrate how to understand our heritage, understand the past, but then also to design better in the future. So we very much like this connection.
These new building techniques have been on display at architecture festivals, but next year they will participate in the creation of a next-generation building in downtown Zurich. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
We'd like to say hello to everyone listening on Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan, and hello to everyone else, wherever you may be in the world. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Byrd on our team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.